Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Ask a PI Talk Radio with hosts David Duchesneau, author, PI, former Marine, and former New Hampshire State Trooper, and Rusty McDonald, PI, author, motivational speaker, and international radio talk show host.
Welcome, everybody, to Ask a PI on this Monday night, this snowy Monday night. Yeah, we get another snowstorm, another major snowstorm to boot. And hopefully everybody's faring this weather well, and hope you're staying dry. And if you're out there and you're driving, please be careful, because the roads are very treacherous. And tonight, we're going to talk about something that I really like to do a lot, and we've done quite a few of, and that is undercover operations, sting operations, if you will, in the private sector. And we've done quite a few of these, and we've been very successful at doing these. And you know, if your firm, if you're a licensed private investigator and you have an agency or you have a firm and you can offer these types of services, I can tell you now that these services are very challenging and they can be very problematic, but they can be very lucrative at the same time. And we've had a lot of fun doing these because of the nature of what we've done and for some of the clients that we've done them for. And I'd like to make a couple of suggestions. If you're a private investigator and you're thinking that you'd like to get involved in this, obviously the first thing that you want to make sure is that you are licensed in the state that you're going to be doing this type of investigations in. And that you're bonded and you're insured. And I would definitely seek the advice of a reputable attorney. I retain an attorney for our firm. He's been with us ever since we started our business back in 1991. And he's a very good attorney. And I run these things by him before I get involved. Then what I do is go and interview the client to see what they have as problems or what they think they have as problems and what they are trying to accomplish by putting an undercover operative in their facilities. And, you know, in the type of facilities that we've done these sting operations in have been many. I mean, we've been in hotel chains, and we've also done distribution, corporations, food distributors, and many other types of companies, including insurance companies. I mean, anybody who owns a company, they can have problems at any time. And being undercover is disguising one own's identity or using an assumed identity for the purpose of gaining the trust of an individual or a bunch of individuals and to learn the secrets, if you will, and to gain information, you know, from these individuals and their trust, so that we can properly document any illegal activity that may be going on within their facility. And, you know, and it doesn't have to be illegal as far as illegal to the law. It can be against policies and procedures of the company or whatever. But, you know, undercover operation means an investigation involving a series of related undercover activities over the period of time by the undercover employee. And I can't stress enough that this is a niche that we have. Not all companies can offer these types of services, and you want to make sure that you can offer this type of service. I mean, it's very, like I said, it can be very problematic, and you want to make sure that, you know, you're doing it correctly. Hi, Rusty, you there?
I am, my friend. How are you? We made it through the blizzard-ridden snowmageddon.
Oh, I know. It's unbelievable. We got this one here, and I was telling our listeners, you know, we got this this storm here, and we got at least one more coming this week. So
I know, and you know, and I looked at Chloe as we were walking, not even, I would say, probably a third of a mile, but the Arctic wind, it's about negative 10 degrees right now, blistering. So we're schlepping through the snow. And I looked at Chloe and I was like, 18 days, and I'm speaking in Boca Raton on the 27th, and I'm so grateful. I could not be more grateful.
Yeah,
it's going to be so warm.
Well, I'm gonna carry your suitcase for you then, because to get out of this mess, that's for darn sure.
We're driving down, so come along.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, I know you know what we're talking about is undercover operations in the private sector. And
It's one of my favorite subjects, so it's
something like I was telling the listeners that we do get involved in, and we do have a lot of fun doing it. But I was saying that if a private investigator wants to get involved in this kind of activity, that they definitely want to know what they're doing, because you're putting yourself out there. You definitely are putting yourself out there, because most of the times, you know, we go in under the disguise of being a new employee within a company or a corporation. And we've detected all kinds of different wrongdoings, you know, including, you know, drug deals, carrying merchandise out the door, putting it in their cars, in other words, you know, theft. We've also, I mean, in the different types of thefts, I mean, we've had thefts of cigarettes from different locations, and I'm not talking just, you know, one or two cartons of cigarettes. I'm talking about...
Actually, can you share that story without divulging too much? Can you share a little bit about that story? Because I found that to be one of the most entertaining stories you've ever told me, is about the cigarettes.
Well, I had a company that called us and says, geez, do you have an undercover operative that we could put, you know, inside our facility? And I, you know, first question is, you know, well, how long, and, you know, and what's the problem? And so they told us that they were missing large amounts of cigarettes, and they were cases of cigarettes that were being taken. And this company is a food distribution company, and they're one of the largest ones in the Northeast. They're a very good client. They've been a client of mine for a long time, and they're still a client. And they have a lot of problems. And anyway, so when he called up, I says, well, what is going on? He says, the night shift that we're having the problems, so they run 24/7. And so I says, how long are we going to be undercover? And at first he says, well, I'd like to put somebody in here you know, for at least 6 months. And I says, don't you think that's a long time? You know, but again, to gain the trust of the people that are doing, you know, that are taking the cigarettes and committing the theft, it does take quite a while for an undercover operative to get into the circle of the people that he needs to get into and to gain their trust and for them to feel comfortable with that individual so that they'll include him or her in what they're doing. So we were in there for at least a month before they were comfortable enough to include our operative. And in fact, they were taking several cartons, yes, cases rather, of various types of cigarettes. And during their break, they would put those cases of cigarettes in their vehicles. So we wired up our guy, and he was wired with a covert camera, which was great. And we were able to take video footage of them carrying the cigarettes out, putting them in the vehicles. And there was literally tens of thousands of dollars worth of cigarettes that were being taken every month. And we did stay in there for approximately 6 months. And it all worked out real well in the end. We ended up going to the police with our evidence at the end of this operation and showing them the video. And then the police stepped in. And once they stepped in, you know, we obviously didn't want to burn our operative at that time, our undercover operative. And so we kept him inside so that we could get some feedback after the police stepped in. And, you know, one thing that we do, especially where I was a police officer for a long time, and once we bring the police in, you know, now we're an extension of the police. We're like an arm, like the arm of the police, and now we have to follow their rules and their rules of evidence. Whereas prior to bringing the police in, we don't have any of those things to worry about. We don't have to worry about, you know, the rules of evidence and everything else that goes along with it. We're pretty much open to do anything we want to do, other than to make people do things that they don't normally do. We can't make people do things. We can't suggest that people do things if they don't do it. And so, because that's entrapment, and we don't want to get involved in that. But this worked out real well for us, and we made a real good name, and our reputation went sky high as far as the food industry. I'll tell you that, the distribution industry. And from that one operation that we did, just by word of mouth, we got a lot of business doing undercover operations. You know, and one of them, from this particular case that we did, we immediately went into a hotel chain that called us, and they were having problems at one of their locations, and they knew they were having problems because the guests were complaining, you know, to the CEO of the company. They were writing letters and they were emailing and everything else. And so the owner of the company got a hold of me. He lived here in the state of New Hampshire. And he had me go to his home. And he told me what he suspected was going on. And we ended up putting two operatives in one of his hotels. And that one went real well for us. I put a male and a female operative in one of his places. And one of my operatives was a very large fellow that I use. He's a real good guy, very knowledgeable, and he posed as a guest, but he was a scout for the hockey league, and the female operative posed as a photographer, and by putting these two people in the hotel, we were able to document all types of activity that was just amazing that was going on right there in the lobby of the hotel, including drugs, prostitution, and anything else that you can imagine that could happen in a hotel. And that worked out real well for us, too. And we got a lot of mileage out of that one, I tell you. That he spread the word very quickly. And because of it, I received numerous phone calls from major hotels on how to conduct different sting operations within their facilities, within their hotels, all over the country. And
so let's talk
that
about
worked
that,
out
David,
real well.
Let's take a step back and really try to understand the step-by-step and not divulging any more information than has already been divulged. But in a sting operation, what are some of the key components that you're looking for as a private investigator to have an effective sting operation? And what kind of clients do you want to have? Because as we've talked about numerous times over and over again, there are some clients that you have to turn away. So what is your suggested understanding for those individuals who are listening that are private investigators or trying to be private investigators in regards to kind of the step-by-step listings? Because that's a tricky, sleazy kind of position. It's one of the toughest positions I think you can have.
I don't think you can't be a one-man operation and do a sting operation. There's no such thing. You have to be able to have the resources to do this, and you have to be able to have good people, reliable people, trustworthy people, and you can't just go out and say I'm a private investigator and I'm going to do sting operations, because it's not going to work. First off, you got to have people that's going to take care of your back. They're going to watch over you. I mean, both of these instances that I just related, obviously, I was on scene a lot of the time, and because the biggest thing that my concern is taking care of my operative and taking care of his identity and making sure that he's not made. Because if he gets made, then, his safety's at jeopardy. And that's one thing you don't want to do. And every time I get involved in an undercover operation, I make sure that the only ones that know that I have, that there's an undercover operative inside a facility, that the only ones that know about it is the CEO and maybe the general manager. But I try to keep it limited to very few people knowing that we have an undercover on site. And that's for the undercover agent's safety. It really is. And that's a big thing that a lot of these corporations don't understand. And that's where a one-man operation just isn't going to make it. I mean, we're fortunate that we can reach out and we can get as many people as we want. I mean, if I want 250 operatives tomorrow, all I got to do is make a phone call, and I can get 250 licensed professional investigators, and I can put them all to work. That's not a problem. A lot of people can't do that. But, that being said, I mean, I've been in this business a long time, and I utilize all my contacts, and I have a lot of contacts. But I've never had a problem, with any of these sting operations that we do. Being undercover, I mean, I was undercover, a couple of times for the state when I worked with the state. And I'm telling you, you can have a lot of fun doing it because you're working with several different agents, different people. But you can get yourself into a lot of trouble if you don't know what you're doing. And you can really jeopardize, like I said, your own safety. If somebody recognizes you, you got to be able to get pulled out immediately, and you got to cease the operation for the safety of that operative. Now, that has never happened to us, but I've heard some horror stories where it has happened. I've seen it happen while I was a police officer, where somebody recognized an undercover operative, and that's a dangerous situation to get into. And so, you like I said, you want to know what you're doing. You want to make sure that you can handle it, and you want to make sure that you have the people necessary to take care of everything that might happen. I mean, you got to be proactive. You got to make sure that you look at everything, and that if you can perceive anything coming up that might happen, that might be negative towards the operation, you want to immediately stop what you're doing and get that operative out of there. And that's a priority. That's my main concern anytime we do these things. And like I said, we've used both male and female operatives to do these things. And sometimes we use teams, a husband and wife's team, and those work very well, especially when we did the hotel thing. It ended up that myself and my wife, who was the owner of the company, she accompanied me to one location, and her and I stayed there for 4 days. And after 4 days, we had enough videotape and enough evidence to get rid of pretty much everybody in the front office of this particular hotel.
I'm going to interject for a second because I think it's really important for people to understand, especially if you're starting out in the industry, not to put somebody, say, like you or me. Like you and I, we both have a very public face. We've been in the public. We have books that we've offered. We're very well known in the community. We would not be perfect undercovers, operatives, because our face is so well known. Like, so how do you choose a good undercover operative? That would be a great start.
Well, what I try to do is now when I get a call from a client who thinks that they have a problem, I ask them pretty much, what is the age factor of the people that you have as employees? And I try to match it up with a undercover operative that I have would be in the range of that age. And I've got a couple of good guys in the Manchester area. These two guys would go to the ends of the earth and do anything for us. And they're licensed under us, and they love this type of work. I mean, they eat it up. And these two guys can take care of themselves. They're in their late 20s, and I've put them in two situations over there in the state of New Hampshire here. In a bottling company was one of them. And the other one was a distribution company, and they've done real well, and they've had no problems at all. And they worked the Concord area, and they're from Manchester, and never had a problem at all fitting in. And that's what you got to try to do. You got to try to match up your people with whatever your client's needs are. And sometimes it doesn't make any difference like you said, you know, you can't put you or I. It wasn't that long ago that I was doing undercover operations, and I was well known here, but I was in a different state. There was a state police barracks from that state right across the street from the hotel that I was working. And the first thing I did is I went to the state police barracks, told them what I was doing. My client was from New Hampshire. He owned the hotel. He owned a string of them. And so I was hired to do a job from New Hampshire, and it just so happened that that hotel was in another state. And I was covered because everything started here in New Hampshire. And that's one important thing, too. You've got to make sure that you're covered by the law. And if it starts here in New Hampshire and it brings me somewhere else, you're covered. But if it starts in another state, then I have to bring in somebody from that state so that I'm covered in that state. And that's the way, you know, you got to think about all these different problems that might arise, because liability-wise, if I were to work that without having somebody licensed from that other state, I would have been liable for anything that happened. And you don't put yourself out there for any of those things, especially if, you know, if you're in there trying to find out whether somebody's, you know, you got employee theft, drug abuse, workplace violence, even fraud compliance issues, anything that could cost the company money. You know, covert operations, undercover operations, you got to cover all your bases. You got to cover your bases as far as the agent's name, address. We usually get a P.O. box in the vicinity of the area that we're working for that agent. So that has to be done. You got to come up with, because they need an address. Because as far as the payroll and any of the front office people are concerned, this individual that we're putting in there is an employee, because they don't know he's undercover. They do utilize their own Social Security number, because they are getting a paycheck. And, you know, you asked, you know, how do we pick and choose? Well, the biggest thing that we pick and choose is the first thing I ask the client is, what's your budget? If they don't have a budget to do this, and it's a shoestring budget, I'm not even going to get involved. Because, like I said from the beginning, and you weren't on then, I don't know if you heard it, I mean, this can be very lucrative, and it does cost a lot of money for clients to hire us to go in and do undercover operations. I mean, obviously, it's not your typical type of investigation that we get involved in. This is a specialized thing. And, of course, the agent is away from home. He's working a job that he normally wouldn't work. They have to get trained at the job that they're doing at whatever facility they're at. Where the cigarettes were, our operative had to learn how to drive a forklift. Not only did he have to learn how to drive a forklift, he had to learn how to properly operate that forklift and be able to go up in, you know, at least four stories high and get cases of not only the cigarettes but other types of food, because they were loading trucks at the same time without doing any damage inside that facility. So, you know, there's a lot that you have to take in consideration when you're doing these types of investigations, and it takes quite a bit of time to get accustomed to what's going on. And so we pick and choose by the nature or the type of investigation or activity that has taken place within that facility that the owner thinks is happening. And we've, like I said, we've never had a problem. Fortunately for us, everything has always worked out real well, and we've always got what we needed for evidence, and we've always were able to target the right people, because, of course, the owner of the company does have a list of names of who he thinks is doing what, and when they give us those lists of names, those are the individuals that that operative, you know, tries to gain their trust and, you know, and confidence and stuff and get in with. It's some of the hottest things is the after work activity. And, you know, you have to train your agents to tell them that, you know, you're not going to go out and party with these people. If you're asked to go out and eat with them and asked to go out to do anything, you always come up with a reason why you can't go. And the biggest thing that when you're doing a cover undercover operation is that at the beginning, you know, none of our people are wearing wires at the beginning because we don't know what's going on. So the biggest thing is the documentation. And our operatives are trained to make documentations immediately, you know, after they get out of work or when they're on break, and make sure that nobody else sees that information that they're writing down. Because let's face it, you can't remember everything as it happens. You do have to take notes and make notes. And that's what we train our operatives to do. All our operatives are trained to do undercover operations. And that's why I say this isn't for everybody. This is for a this is a specialized field that we get involved in. Because we've been trained to do this, and I personally have trained several of our people to do the same thing. And that's the difference right there, the training, because that can make you or break you as far as being or offering these types of services, you know, these sting operations, if you will. Because they are sting operations. Because in the final, you know, when it's all said and done with, somebody is not only going to get fired. Most cases, somebody is going to get arrested, and somebody is going to be prosecuted for whatever crimes that they are committing within their facilities. And so that's very important. It really is. And an operative, you know, you can have cameras all over the place. Your employees, after they're there for a while, you know, in the company, they know where the cameras are located. And if you got a good undercover in place, it is just invaluable. And it will surpass any camera that you might have in place as far as what's really going on. Remember, in the state of New Hampshire, we cannot, you know, we cannot intercept any audio part of a video. So the cameras that are in place in this state, they do not record audio or any voices or anything. So that's how important it is that the undercover has a good memory. He knows what to write down. He knows what to take for notes. And also make sure that you get the name of the individuals that are doing whatever it is that they're not supposed to be doing. Any other questions on that?
No, not at all. But this is a great time because we're kind of halfway into the show. I want you to be able to talk to us a little bit about uniforms. I received a couple of messages in regards to people in various other states that want to get a hold of your book, autographs, and everything. So can you talk to us for about 3 minutes in regards to uniforms, where they can find it, how we can get it autographed, because guess what? You're the sponsor tonight.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. My book, called Uniforms, it's a very good read. It's a good book. It tells the story of a young man from when he's growing up in the 50s and 60s and what it was like to grow up in the 50s and 60s. You know, the baby boomer, if you will, world. And it takes readers through what happened back in the 50s and 60s, how we entertained ourselves, what we did for fun. It talks about when it talks about me. When I was in a drum and bugle corps, which was the Grenadiers, which was right out of Rochester here, and the 10 years that I served, that I was in the drum corps playing a bugle, then at 18, it goes on to talk about how I enlisted in the United States Marine Corps, and I take readers through what it was like to go to boot camp at Parris Island, down in South Carolina, and all the aspects of what I went through as a boot in boot camp, and then all the training that I went through because they were preparing me to go to Vietnam, and then I take readers through my two tours in Vietnam from 1969 to 1970, and what it was like to be a combat Marine while I was in Vietnam. And then what happened when I came home and how I was perceived by the public back here in the world, because that's what we called it back in the United States, was the world, and how I was treated, which was not very good. And, you know, it took 44 years before anybody ever said to me, "Welcome home," from Vietnam. It took 44 years for that to happen. And it's just amazing the way that a lot of us Vietnam vets were treated. We were treated like criminals with cold shoulders. And, you know, I was met at the airport by protesters. And, I mean, one woman called me a baby killer, and she spit on my uniform, you know. And one thing that amazed me is that the Marine Corps trained me to do a lot of things, but they never prepared me for what happened when I came home, and or what was going to happen to me when I came home. And that's amazing. I don't know why the military did that, but I don't think they knew what was going on and how we were being treated, because today when a military unit goes overseas to Afghanistan, or when they went to Iraq, or when they go anywhere else, as a matter of fact, they go as a unit and they come back as a unit. Well, we went over to Vietnam as a unit, but we came back as individuals. I came back to the United States from Vietnam, you know, with just a couple of other guys, and we didn't come back as a unit. And because of that, we weren't treated very well at all. We were not welcomed. But anyway, my book, Uniforms, can be found on the Internet. I have a website. It's called www.uniformsthebook.com, and you can order the book there. But if you'd like to get a personalized signed copy of my book, all anybody has to do is email me at David, D-A-V-I-D, at Standa, S-T-A-N-D-A, .com, and request an autographed copy of the book, and I'd be more than happy to autograph it and send it out to anybody who would like one. I can guarantee that you will enjoy reading the book, and if you do request that I sign a book and send it out to you, the soft cover is $20, the hard cover is $30, and that does include shipping. And all you have to do is provide me with an address and where you want the book shipped to. And if you want it personalized, just let me know what name you'd like to have on the book, and I will personalize that book for you. Now that I did that, you talk about
your
books.
Well, even bigger than that. Yeah, even bigger than that, I have to tell you, David, you're going to be a little surprised. I know that you've been a little under the weather, so I haven't connected with you. But guess what you and I are doing soon? We're
going
to have a book launch party. We're going to have a book launch party. And guess what? I've got 5 books that are coming out in 120 days. It's been crazy, cray-cray, as the kids would say. So those are coming out. Two of them are in the press. Two of them are being edited, and one is just that I'm working on the photography piece with my personal photographer, Jay Burns, who I love, 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 love. He does a great job with his work. He's beautiful, amazing, and just a phenomenal photographer. But I'm looking for a venue. I don't know if you got to see that today, if you were on Facebook at all, but the Chop Shop had offered a space. But I was hoping to get a little closer to Portsmouth because it's a lot easier for people to travel to. And 2 of my books are co-authored, so there's a lot of people to attend. And I want you there, and I want your book there. So hopefully that will be happening in the next 30 days. Are you ready, David?
I'm always ready.
I know you
are. I always have a supply of books, and I'm always ready. Matter of fact, I just did I'm involved in the Veterans Hospice Group program, and I just 2 weeks ago I went to the Portsmouth, and they wanted to know about the book, and they wanted to know, you know, what I thought of their program, the Veterans Hospice Program. And I'm one of the individuals that have been selected to go and meet with the veteran and present the veteran with a certificate thanking him for his service, him or her, and also to give them a copy of my book. I'm very excited that I'm very honored to do that because, I know what post-traumatic stress disorder does to people. I know what it's all about. And I know that a lot of these veterans who are in their final stages of life and what, especially if they're a combat veteran, that they have some dark secrets that they really need to get rid of before they pass on to their next duty station. And this is something that I hope to help them to transition with. And like I said, I'm honored to do it. And I like doing that. And I think it's really, really needed around here. Matter of fact, it's needed everywhere in the country.
Well, and that's one of the things that has actually evolved our friendship. You were protecting me a long time ago, and that's how we connected. I heard about you through word of mouth, and I just felt really empowered by you and your devotion, not only to soldiers, but to people in general. And I've always given you such high regards in regards to your compassion, your level of ethics, and your book is amazing. So I'm really excited about being able to share a venue with you and have people really connect with the truth behind not only the pains of being a soldier, but, you know, the love, too, because, quite frankly, you've seen some things that you don't really want to talk about, and yet you're still a private investigator, you still help people, you're still straightforward. And you're still very compassionate to making sure that things have their checks and balances. So kudos to you for all that you do for our community and society. And I really hope that other people as soldiers, as veterans, are able to pick up the ball and move forward and kind of walk in your path because, you know, it's going to take more than just you, David, to
No, I
make
know it is.
That right.
Believe me. But you know what, Rusty, you got to start somewhere.
That's right. And you're definitely the leader of the pack. So let's get this venue found and move forward on that for sure because I'm really excited. All of these books I'm going to have on my table next week. I'm so excited. I'm scared and terrified and excited and scared and terrified. And I drive down to Boca Raton in about 18 days to speak at a gluten-free wellness event. on February 22nd. So for those of you who are listening that are Southern like me, Lord have mercy, I've already packed my sandals. Those girls are shined, and we're ready for some sun. Because this, you know, blizzard-geddon is really getting me down, man. So let's
continue, we got more to come.
Oh, shush you and you're swearing on the radio. You know that's against FCC regulations. So let's wrap up the show in regards to sting operations and pros and cons. Go for it.
Well, you know, one of the main concerns, like I said, of an undercover assignment is the overall safety of that operative. So that's the biggest thing. And so that's why it's very important that the least amount of people who know who the undercover is or that there is an undercover in a facility is very important. And there are many types of, you know, of undercover operations in the private sector that you can get that you can get involved in. You know, unlike law enforcement, like I said, who has the monetary resources and receives federal grants, you know, in everything pretty much they do to combat, you know, and to operate undercover operations, you know, we in the private sector depend solely on the client's budget. However, the client should never be permitted to run or direct the undercover investigation. The client can provide information, intelligence, but he should not be allowed to direct the investigation or the agency on what to do or how to do it. And that's something that's very, you know, that's very important. It's a hard sell when you go to a CEO because you're dealing with personalities, and, you know, everybody's got egos, and the only way I get around this is I tell them, look, you know what you're doing. You get paid to do what you do, and you do it very well. Now you're bringing me in to do a specific job, and I know what I do, and I do my job very well. So just let us do what we have to do, and, you know, and don't try to run our show. And that's a hard sell in a lot of times, but again, that's another thing that we look at when we take on an undercover assignment, and that includes, you know, the person that hires us. I don't even want him or her to be talking to that undercover operative. I don't want any contact whatsoever, and I make that known right from the beginning. And I also make it known that if there is going to be anything like that, or if anything like that does happen, and my agent does come to me and say that somebody, you know, took him aside and said some words to him, then we're going to pull out. I'm going to submit a bill, and they're going to they're on their own. And all my clients know this up front. We all have a contract. And it's stipulated within the contract all these different things that I just talked about. And if they, as long as they don't break them, you know, we keep going. So, you know, you want to make sure that if you do undercover operations, that you do have a contract in place and that you do have stipulations that you're going to run the show. It's your show, and you're going to call the shots. And that's really very important. And it's also for, you know, it's vital to the outcome of the operation. Once a company has decided to contact an investigative agency for an undercover operation, the first step is, like I said, to have that company sign the contract. And within the contract, it says what's going to happen. It's going to do the scope of the investigation, and it's going to outline the details on how everything is going to be conducted, including the payment and the payment to the undercover operative. I mean, he's going to be getting paid, he or she will be getting paid from the company, and then we'll, you know, make up the difference of whatever the money is, you know, hourly wage, we make up the difference. To make sure that our undercover operative gets what he duly deserves for his for his work. I strongly suggest that an agency receive a retainer up front to cover all expenses. And the retainer, they're, like I said, the expenses are going to be, you know, getting the undercover, the getting that agent set up with an identity and with an address and with the P.O. box and everything that they need. And so...
interject and just say that as painful as it sounds, you know, if you're not educated in regards to any type of protection services, whether it's your lawyer, you know, or a private investigator, or even my friend who happens to be a truck driver, we were talking about this today, you know, he's a truck driver, and part of his contractual agreement with whomever he brokers with, there is an upfront fee. He's guaranteed a certain amount of money upfront to maintain his business, meaning get gas, you know, uniforms, whatever, in order to carry out the task. And that's no different than a private investigator. It's no different than somebody who's doing undercover work, because you're going to have to pay for gas and mileage. That's just very common. If they have to have a burner phone, which you can explain what a burner phone is later, or whatever the needs are, it's kind of an insurance policy that, okay, you signed on to this deal, you're going to have to help me make sure that it happens. And it's just mano-a-mano type stuff. And I find it interesting how people sometimes become very shocked at that. And I know for the many years that I've been in court, whether personally having to be in court with my divorce issues or as an advocate, lawyers always get a retainer fee. So this is not something that's far-fetched or inappropriate to ask for. What do you think is kind of the setting? You know, most lawyers are $2,500, but is that the same? Is there like a generic number for private investigation undercover work, or is it based on
I think
on
it
case?
All depends on what the client is asking for. And, you know, a retainer of $2,500 is sometimes not enough. I mean, we've had retainers. Well, I've had retainers of $5,000, and I've had retainers of $50,000. All depends on what we're doing. When we went to Haiti, and I brought five investigators with us, that was a $50,000 retainer. And when we took the company, we took some of the company with us, not our company, but the client's company, and we were there for one purpose and one purpose only. And because we went, and because they wanted it, they quickly paid the $50,000 retainer. And the job was well over $50,000 by the time we got done. But I want to interject one big thing here is I strongly suggest that if you do undercover work, that you retain your first name. Every time that I went undercover, my first name was always Dave. I've always used David, and that's because if you don't, and if by chance you're out in public or you're at a store and somebody sees you, because they always call you by your first name, and if you are seen by an employee that knows you working at this company, at least they're going to hear the first name, and you will have no problems. So always utilize your first name and come up with a fictitious last name. And mine has always been Dave Johnson. I've been Dave Johnson forever. And I'll probably be Dave Johnson for the rest of my life, for all I know.
You'll never be able to go undercover now, you know.
Oh, don't worry. There's a lot of Dave Johnsons out there.
I think anyway. There's 3,822 last time I pulled up a report.
Yeah. But no, see, there's a lot of things that you have to take in consideration, like I said, when you're doing this stuff. There's a lot of things you got to worry about. You know, and it all depends on the type of investigation that you're getting involved in and what you're uncovering. And sometimes you might uncover nothing. And because that's going to be a very short run undercover operation. If there's nothing going on, we quickly notify the client and say, hey, look, you're wasting your money. There's nothing happening here. And I've even had times where it was so petty that I would suggest to the client that they put up a covert camera in certain areas, and that would take care of their problem, and they would save themselves a lot of money. And that has happened on more occasions than none, believe me. But, that's why I have repetitive business. That's why they keep coming back to me. That's what I like about it. Because, like you said, okay, I don't make up stuff. I tell it like it is. And if I think that if I can save the client money, they know I'm going to save them money in whatever I do. And, again, I have that reputation, and my clients appreciate it, believe me. And I know we don't have very much time, so I'm going to go right to the end of it. And in summary, offering covert undercover investigation, again, is very lucrative service that any agency can provide. But these types of services take proper planning. And, again, the safety of the undercover operative is of the utmost importance. That should come first. Make sure that when accepting any type of undercover investigation, your investigative agency has the necessary resources to properly conduct these types of special investigations. This isn't something that you do all the time, so it is special. And if you have any doubt that you can do this, by all means, subcontract these types of investigations out to a reliable agency that does have the resources in place and the experience in conducting successful covert operations. If you take on a case like this, and if you drop the ball or if you don't deliver, that's your reputation. That's your firm's reputation, but ultimately that's your reputation that you're dealing with. And I'll tell you, I won't give up my reputation. I won't taint it in any way. And when I take a case on, I take it on because I know that I can handle it and I can properly do it and that the client will get the results that they need for whatever the problem may be. And so that's pretty much it in a nutshell. But it's important to know that if you want to get involved in this, then try to get a job in an agency somewhere that does this type of work and get trained to do undercover operations. Sting operations aren't for everybody. It takes a certain kind of individual to do them, and you better have the gift of gab because you got to come up sometimes with a very quick answer when you're placed on a spot. And,
all right.
I have that capability. All right. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight, and hopefully that you're inside and you're staying dry. But if you're out there on the roads, please drive safe. And remember, maybe you know how to drive, but it's that other person that you want to worry about, the other driver. Anyway, thank you for listening, and stay safe, everyone.
Stay safe, and we will talk to you on Monday night. And don't forget to check us out on Facebook.com/AskAPI. And David loves emails. It keeps him busy. So that's David, D-A-V-I-D, at Standa, S as in Sam, P as in Tom, A as in Apple, N as in Nancy, D as in David, A as in Apple.com. So email David with your book requests. And until next Monday, we'll hope that you're safe. And don't forget to ask your local PI if you need some help.
You are listening to Ask a PI Talk Radio with hosts David Duchesneau, author, PI, former Marine and former New Hampshire State Trooper, and Rusty McDonald, PI, author, motivational speaker, and international radio talk show host.